This is one of my favorite times. It's time for Counter Stories, a podcast by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Reverend Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark's AME Church and senior partner at Dendros Group.
I'm Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the state of Minnesota. Any comments or opinions that I make are solely my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
And I'm Don Eubanks, associate with Dendros Group and member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group and producer of Counter Stories.
So we have the full crew here, and as we record this, it is before the new year. This is a special episode of Counter Stories. Stick around for a bonus conversation about the Potter verdict. In that new year vein, there are things that we tend to hope for, things that we tend to think about how we want the next year to be or be different. And so we want to bring everybody together to say, what are you hoping for in 2022? Given all of that we've been through this last year, I know that there are many things that may be on your mind. And we weighed in and put this question out to the community and got a few responses in that we may include in our discussion. But Counter Stories crew, what are you hoping for in 2022? And I did not mean to make that rhyme.
You're that good, though. it just happens with you. I've got a few things, and I'll start off. Climate change. In 2021, what was amazing was to see all these young people come out globally and, of course, across our country against climate change and really holding elected leaders accountable very loudly. And who else but to do that, right? I mean, we all have a responsibility no matter how old we are, but to see young people really taking that on and owning that, I thought was really powerful. And it gives me hope coming into 2022, excuse me, as we continue to see and witness all of these very unusual weather patterns that are clear indicators that climate change is real and that it's so sad to begin to think about what the world will look like 20 years from now, 40 years from now, 50 years from now, when these young folks are either in their prime or moving along in their journey in life, right? What will be left behind? And really wanting to have that fierce urgency of now for policymakers to act. So I am hopeful on that ground. Another point that gives me hope is young people helping break the stigma around mental health. There's been so much activity because of COVID, I think, 19, with the pandemic and isolation. So many people have had, of course, mental health concerns, but more importantly, they're coming out with their stories on TikTok and Instagram. Not that I follow them, but I read and I'm told by my two younger daughters about how folks are framing it in a positive way. They're not ashamed to say that they're seeing a therapist or their friends are seeing a therapist or they're all seeing therapists. And then, of course, the quintessential example is Simone Biles. When she went through the Olympics and was facing some mental health concerns and her just putting it all out there as this world-class athlete and calling it out and having then other athletes beginning to support her and then being ultimately selected as the athlete of the year by Sports Illustrated, which was just amazing. There's two more. Young people helping build trust in vaccines locally and globally, just seeing and witnessing young people who are really calling it out in terms of what really matters and encouraging folks to step up for the vaccines and making sure that we have a safer community. And then the fourth thing that gives me hope is Amanda Gorman's writings and poems. And she issued one earlier this month in December entitled New Day's Lyric. And if I can, I'd like to read it. It's a very short, it's only 48 lines resolution. And it's just so powerful. What was cursed, we will cure. What was plagued, we will prove pure. What we tend to argue, we will try to agree. Those fortunes we forswore, now the future we foresee. Where we weren't aware, we're now awake. Those moments we missed are now these moments we make. The moments we meet, and our hearts once all together beaten, now all together beat. It's just a very powerful set of lyrics that hopefully guides us all as we look to 2022.
This is a special episode of Counter Stories. Stick around for a bonus conversation about the Potter verdict. I'm Anthony Galloway with co-hosts Luz Maria Frias, Don Eubanks, and Hli Lee. This show was created and supported by Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. Luz, one of the pieces on your list in particular to the vaccine really resonated with some of the messages that I received in the call that Hli put out around today's episode. It makes me think of the power of those poems, right? How we come together. Miss Romalita, who comes to us from the Hopi Res, so Third Mesa in Arizona, says that one of her hopes for this coming year is that folks will finally wake up and see that we're in this together, that her family matters to her. And as much as my family matters to me, I want my family to matter to others as well. So far, as good as I've gone COVID-free, even after having one family member testing positive in the household and several others who have died, I have to think to my two grandbabies under 2.5, their mama, a granddaughter under 12, and 4 elderly parents-in-law who also mean the world to me, and I wish they would mean the world to others as well. That's one of her hopes for 2022. There's a lot on that list.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's folks who are reaching out, and I think it would resonate that hope for 2022. One major one is that we'll actually start to think about each other in a way that goes beyond just ourselves and what we can box our own kind of cultural political views around. So there's some co-signing with some of the folks who weighed in.
It's beautiful. Yep.
Luz dropped a poem from one of the poets of the age.
So, yeah. But it's also like, I mean, what are the, you know, how realistic, is that?
Are people actually figuring out how to care for each other?
Right. And you know, climate change, like how fast are the people who actually have power to make large scale change gonna actually start giving up about it? Right.
Well, that actually.
I mean, mental health. I mean, yeah, people are starting to be public and say, check on your mental health, see a therapist. But, you know, I was just inquiring about a therapy session with a specialist, and it's $280 an hour. I can't afford that. You know, it's like, if she doesn't take insurance, I mean, it's like, you know, who can afford it? So it's. Yeah, it's great, but we don't have universal health care, and it doesn't, you know, I mean, I understand, like, I think it's great that we hope for these things, but that's different, right, than being near it, actually being able to see it being realized.
Yeah, to your point, Hli, I mean, clearly so much of this will not happen overnight. I think about when Colin Kaepernick first took the knee in 2016, and feeling that when are we going to see change? And it changed slowly but surely is starting to turn the corner, right? We're starting to see some change with regard to the framing of Black Lives Matter has turned, right? But also the impact that the protests have had with regard to social unrest and law enforcement. And I'll leave that high level, and I know that the crew is going to be having a discussion later on, and I will bow out on that. But there are articles already and studies that show that the number of killings of unarmed civilians, most particularly, of course, Black men and women and children, is on the decline as a result of the protests that have occurred in the last 5 years or so. So, to your point, Hli, I know it's not an overnight type of result and outcome that we want, but we have to keep fighting for what we need to make our society a better place.
Well, this is why I need you in my life, Lou.
Well, and keep in mind, right? Because we can often fall into a single definition for hope, right? We're not talking about, you know, we can be talking about the big grand picture change, but I'm just thinking about in this next year, what are some things I want to see happen? What I want to, you know, push into fruition in some way, whether it's big and looming or whether it's small. I look at the message in response, Lee. My daughter is actually one of the folks who sent in a message. And, you know, she had a particular thing. She said, in addition to hoping that COVID can be over, she also said that I hope that Kimberly Potter gets a sentence that we see justice done in that regard. She, you know, we have young folks who are weighing in and saying, and are waking up and activating. That was on my list of hopes, that we would see young people getting engaged in ways that they hadn't before. That's something I can absolutely see evidence for. So let's make sure we use, you know, as we think about this example, this question, let's think about short term, near term, long term, and let's not be limited to what we think can happen, you know, because some of the best ideas have come out of spaces where somebody says, I wish the world looked like this. And then somebody might hear that and make traction around that. So you know, to me, it can go small scale, large scale, you know, whatever it is. And it doesn't necessarily have to be something that's real. Like I can find something to be hopeful for, even in the midst of all the crap that's happening around me. That's part of my cultural upbringing. Like that's kind of how we do. That's why we had that conversation with the NPR researcher folks around the concept of hope in Minnesota, that you question might need some nuance to it, because somebody may give you an answer, even though they have a long list of things that ain't going really hopeful right now too.
Well, as Reverend Jesse Jackson said, what, in the late 1980s when he was running for U.S. president, keep hope alive, right? And that ended up being something that he just kept cementing in people's minds, that while we wouldn't see change overnight, keep hope alive 24/7, that'd get us there. Anthony, remind us how old your daughter is, because I think I have a sense for, well, yeah, I was going to say, she's very young, and I think our listeners would be really impressed. Mm. So she is?
She's 11. She's absolutely 11. Don, I'm curious what's coming over your head as you think about what you hope to see in 2022.
So, you know, you've already touched on, I guess for me, one of the issues, and that's COVID, and hoping that that, you know, as you say, Anthony, that we can begin to think about, you and Luz both have mentioned that we both can begin to think about each other and what that means. Because it's kind of sad, you know, I was sitting here listening to you guys talk, and I've been retired now, coming up on about a half a year. And it's kind of sad because, you know, you work most of your life, you know, when you start working. And I started when I was 15, and you look forward to being able to retire. And I'm a social animal. I'm not an introvert at all. I like to get out. I like to mingle socially. I like to be around people. I like to go out and eat. I like to go to the parks. I'm looking forward to enjoying my retirement, and I really can't do that right now because of the atmosphere, because of, we have this new variant. Just as it seems like we might be easing out of this, then it morphs, it changes, which is what viruses do. And then we find ourselves now with rising cases. They're saying 1 in 20 individuals will have Omicron. I mean, and so it's like, you know, I haven't been able to leave the house. It's winter time. It's cold. The days are shorter. You know, we have these short days, long nights. I suffer like everyone else when the nights get longer and the sunshine isn't out as much. It affects your mood. It affects your, and when you're stuck in the house. So for me, I'm hoping that 2022 allows us to be able to come back together. And really, I mean, you know, come back together where we can go out and we can We can engage with others outside of this pandemic. I mean, so for me, it's just simple. I want to be able to enjoy my retirement.
Hey, and that's real talk. That's real talk.
So you're talking about really freedom, right? Point. You just want the freedom to do what you had been accustomed to doing pre-COVID. You want to be able to have the mobility, the accessibility, and all that stuff.
This is a special episode of Counter Stories. Stick around for a bonus conversation about the Potter verdict. I'm Anthony Galloway with co-hosts Luz Maria Frias, Don Eubanks, and Hli Lee. This show was created and supported by Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
For me to get out means to hop in my car and take a 15-minute drive. Nowhere. But just to get out of the house, and on my way back, I passed a van that had the name of a facility that's right down the street from where I live. And I passed this van, but we both turned at the same street, and I'm coming home, and I noticed in my rearview mirror that they didn't turn about a block. You know, they didn't turn where they should have turned. In fact, they followed me all the way to my home. So I put my car in the garage and I get out, and the van is sitting at the end of my driveway. And so I walked to the driveway and I looked at the guy, and he rolled his window down. He said, "Your rear brake light is out." So he followed me two blocks past where he works just to let me know my rear brake light was out. That interaction, the most interaction I've had with someone, but the fact that he was kind enough to just follow me home to tell me my brake light brightened my day. So, you know what I mean? Just a simple act like that.
I have the opposite experience.
Of course you do.
I'm like you, Don. I don't leave the house unless I absolutely need to.
There's a tradition in the African American community for watch night. It started in 1862 in the expectation of the taking of effect of the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. And folks kept watch on that New Year's Eve to see that this would actually be real. I think we all are asking for our own version of Watch Night, where we hope that 2022 brings some of the hopes and starts to address some of the fears, just like those folks in that community were hoping in 1862. This has been Counter Stories. I'm Reverend Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark's AME Church and senior partner at Dendros Group.
I'm Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the State of Minnesota. Any comments and opinions that I share are strictly my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
I'm Don Eubanks, Associate with Dendros Group, a member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
And I'm Hli Lee, owner of the Other Media Group and producer of Counter Stories.
All right, hold up. Before you leave, we wanted to talk about something big that just happened here in Minnesota. But in order to do that, we had to lose our sister, Luz Frias, who is the Deputy Attorney General of Minnesota. We're going to be talking about matters that might coincide with her job, and we want to make sure that we protect her so she can keep doing her thing, and that we can get into what we want to be talking about here fully. And then what we're going to be talking about is, of course, the verdict in the Kimberly Potter trial. This is the officer who has now been convicted of being responsible for the death of Dante Wright. In fact, a prosecutor described Potter's actions as, according to CNN, a tragic blunder born of recklessness or negligence, and the defense characterized the shooting as an honest mistake, not a crime. Of course, the jury took 4 days, or 27 hours about, to deliver a guilty verdict for all of the charges that were given him for manslaughter and the killing of Dante Wright. So we have yet again in Minnesota law enforcement official being held accountable for taking the life of an unarmed person in our, and we've done it 3 times now here in the state of Minnesota. So what's coming up for you all? What was coming up for you when you heard the verdict?
I was scared. I was really scared. I didn't know which way it was going to go. You know, the Tuesday of that week, so about 2 days before the announcement, the jury had come back to the judge and asked what would happen if they couldn't come to a conclusion. So that really worried me. I know that everybody was trying to get home for the holidays, right? It was right before Christmas. So I thought, oh my gosh, are they just going to have a hung jury and we're going to get to go through this because everybody wants to get home to their families. So I was super, super, and you guys know, because I was texting you.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to announce it at this. There's a press conference here. And, you know, just, so I was surprised. I was happy though. I was happy, but, surprised. Yeah.
Don, what was coming up for you as you listened to the verdict?
Well, I was, I have to admit this one, surprised me a little bit when you think of not that I didn't believe she shouldn't be held accountable. I was surprised by the makeup of the jury that she was. Because that jury consisted of 6 white men, 3 white women, 2 Asians, and 1, I believe, black woman. And so the fact that these 6 white males convicted her is what really surprised me. So it was, you know, it was with a mix of emotions, because how many times have we been down this path, right? Your father-in-law posted something on social media, a day after the verdict, it basically kind of just saying that, you know, not following a lawful command is not a capital crime, mm-hmm. is not capital does not merit capital punishment, right? Because a lot of people still feel that, you know, they characterized Dante as a thug, as a criminal. He didn't follow the orders. And, you know, so when I saw that comment by your father-in-law, it immediately, you know, my reaction to this situation again is it doesn't matter if we follow, it doesn't matter if we don't follow. Just ask Philando Castile, right? He was following every command that was being given to him, and he still ended up dead. And that person was not held accountable. We had an incident where an older white male, a guy jumps to a cop, tries to get him while he's in his truck with his door open. He closes the door to his truck, traps the police officer's arm in his truck, starts driving away, and as he's doing that, he hits the officer on the head with a hammer, assaults this individual, right? The officer frees himself. This individual was arrested, right? Mm-hmm. And was charged, found, and found guilty. But the fact that he was arrested, right? Imagine that scenario involving a person of color. Would that, you know, and unfortunately here in Minnesota, we have to ask ourselves, would that person have been arrested?
And our data backs that up, Don, very specifically. There's disproportionate levels of force used on people of color. I mean, it's the data is so clear, and I don't know why that continues to be an arguing point. Folks want to talk about individual situation to situation, and people of color are trying to scream and share, like, look at the widespread disparity in the numbers. Zoom out a little bit and look at the trend that's here. And I think that's an important point to, you know, that you bring up, Don, is that disproportional response is the crux of the issue, and folks aren't willing to address that. And in order to get around that, are trying to, you know, would try to do what I feel the defense did in here, which is, you know, to their credit, that's all you really can do in this, right? They had to prove that this was an unfortunate mistake, and that was the defense's take. But I think, you know, the prosecutor said, and I quote, accidents can still be crimes if they occur because of recklessness or culpable negligence. It's not a defense to the crimes charged. And so I think it's an important thing to think about that says, an important message that's being sent here. It says, look, you know, you're held to a high standard. And, you know, if you have the ability to take life, you have a higher level and threshold of diligence and thought than everybody, than the average Joe on the street. And you can be held accountable.
You got to know the difference between your handgun and your taser. I'm sorry. And there, you know, and the fact that they came and asked to be able to hold that officer's handgun versus the taser, you can't be on the force for 27 years and not know the difference. And so I, you know, but, so yeah, I was surprised. Second degree manslaughter, it was the first degree that really surprised me.
Got it.
But the fact that a jury of her peers found her guilty. And so, you know, I think that, you know, and we're tying this in with our previous conversation. So my hope is, I think, you know, one thing that I hope really happens is that there is actual reform, that there is an actual reform, because I think there was a big push, an awareness, and then we ended up with whatever happened over there in Minneapolis with this last vote, and in terms of their efforts, current efforts to try to look at reformation. But I think that, you know, we still have an opportunity, not just in policing, but across the board, in terms of how this impacts communities of color, American Indians and other people of color, when it comes to unequal access to employment, jobs, you know, housing down the line. I my hope is that we're moving closer to that type of scenario. You know, the other case that we didn't have a chance to really touch on a lot was the one down in New Brunswick, Georgia, with Aubrey, right? Who hunted this young man down, and then tried to claim they were fearful of their lives, even though they're the only ones who are armed. And the fact that, you know, they're being held accountable.
The conviction of Travis McMichael and his father, Gregory McMichael, in that case was, again, that happened right after we had heard the news of the jury not finding Kyle Rittenhouse.
Exactly.
In the deaths that he caused. We'll sign off for the last time in 2021. This has been a special bonus segment of Counter Stories discussing the verdict of the Kimberly Potter trial. Have a good rest of your year, and we look forward to 2022. This has been Counter Stories, a co-production of the Counter Stories crew, Other Media Group, and AMPERS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.